Hi, I'm Soraya Mia, and you're watching It's About Youth. Now, a 2020 report by the United Nations revealed that the yearly flood covers about 30,000 square kilometers, or 9% of the country inhabited by about 5 million people. Now, the same report also revealed that it is predicted that the rising sea levels will also increase these areas prone to flood, alongside with the intensifying rainfalls, which are proven to be increasing on a yearly basis due to climate change. Now, with floods being one of the biggest climate threats Malaysia faces, let's discuss how important it is for detailed mitigation plans, long-term and short-term. Now, on the show tonight, we have Shakib Shahril, who is a climate finance policy consultant and an exco of BN Youth Volunteers, as well as Ahmad Norfitri Badrul Nizam, who is from the Youth United for Earth, or Youth Malaysia. Hello.
Hello.
Hi. Hi. Yeah.
All right, let's start with Shakib. So I understand that you've been doing or collecting data on the losses due to floods for the households across the country. Share with us your findings.
So, first of all, thank you so much for inviting me. Second, when it comes to that question, right now we are going into 40% of our data collections. We are expecting on the, if I'm not mistaken, February or March, we will be getting a whole 100% of the data analysis. However, when it comes to this data analysis, a quick analysis that has been shown last year would be around 15 billion. Ringgit losses. So this one is included the household and at the same time industry area as well. However, when it comes to several hotspots such as Shah Alam and then Kuala Pilah, these are the places that we want to learn more about the behaviorism and such. So from there, we want to know more. Is just a climate threat, or it is more onto the problems of the mitigation from Malaysia, or is it because of our land, most of our areas have been sinking? So I think this is some of the theories that has been involved, and throughout the research that we find out that we have a flood inflation. So if we look into the Taman Seri Muda, and there's a lot of loss of foods, maiden issues and such. So from there, we could see that there's a trend of flood inflation. And throughout this research, we are trying to find the proof on it exists or not, this flood inflation, and how much the value and percentage involved. And is it 15 billion, it is just end there, or it will be increased much more over? So, yeah.
Yeah, that's really interesting on flood inflation. But you know, with Shakib, with what Shakib just shared, you know, this is something that we understand. Floods are impacting households, the economy, GDP, agriculture, and whatnot. As we see in the December 2021 massive floods in the Klang Valley, the government definitely spent billions of ringgit to recover due to these floods. But what about these social impacts? Maybe you could share your take on the social impacts of the floods.
Right, so if you look at last year, you'd see such an increase of youth mobilization, especially during to mitigate all these effects of flood. So there's a lot of youth groups, you know, individual youth groups, and very scattered, started to participate in the sense of camaraderie to help around, you know, go into these villages, not just villages. That kind, you talk about Klang Valley, it's all these areas of rumah-rumah perumahan. So these are the areas where a lot has been affected, and youth from across the Klang Valley came together to mobilize such change in helping to clean up, and they had to churn out their own money. The sense of volunteerism is such a respectable a cause for the youth in the last year. But nevertheless, you know, despite all the happiness of sharing this togetherness, a lot of forlorn and frown faces, because people are saddened. You know, their livelihoods are taken away. And if you talk about how these individual households, the sinking funds, you talk about sinking, right? Sinking funds for the future, for the education of the children, banyak. You know, it's bocor, because you have to pay to reparate some of the losses that they have to bear, right? So you take away some of the opportunities of the youth of the future to get good education, to get good health, income, healthcare, personal healthcare. So a lot of that has to recover back just because of the flood.
Some lawmakers may argue that investing in flood mitigation measures or plans, like, you know, investing in proper infrastructure to avoid from floods from happening, or also like maintaining drainage systems, can be costly. What do you think about this?
So when it comes to this, I think we have a lot of research papers out there, especially came from Malaysians. They wrote that most of this mitigation action, it doesn't work anymore in Malaysia. I think we need to go beyond that. We need to adapt more on the adaptation. So I think I believe that there will be a national adaptation plan, but we need to go for not just in the mid-term solution, but we need to have a short-term and also a long-term strategic plan when it comes to this. And adaptation, I mean, it's a simple word, it's adapting. That places. But however, when it comes to adapting, it is important to have pokok bakau and such. This is a very small nitty-gritty stuff, but at the same time, it's a very important thing, especially those coastal areas such as Sepang, Klang. These places need a pokok bakau, and then they need to have a better drainage system. I think when it comes to this mitigation action, maybe we can cover on the drainage, and then those location flood prone punya areas untuk collecting the water and such. I think this one we need to have a strategic water catchment areas park. Like if we look into a Chula Longkorn in Bangkok. Bangkok is one of the
also
places,
very flood prone.
Yeah, very flood prone. So because of there's a Chula Longkorn Centennial Park, so it is designed not just water catchment. It can use a lot of waste on that water. At the same time, over there, you can increase the social mobility, you can increase your mental health issues and such. So there's a lot of ways to do that. However, if we look into our situations, I think one of the way that we can do is, one is in area Kuala Selangor, and another one is University of Malaya itself. Can be a centennial park itself. But that's only just a case scenario. And if we look into the mitigation, I think, I believe the one place that we can look into a Kanto region in Tokyo. So that's focusing more on the mitigation. I think we need that kind of infrastructure to make sure that this flood is not stopping us, but at the same time, we can live with floods and we can use flood as an advantage for our economy and our social mobility as well.
Mm-hmm. What do you think about?
Because, the Malaysian climate is well adapted to all the different type of climate, right? So make use of what we can. But I was, while he was saying, I was thinking about how, natural way of how to mitigate. Because there's a sense of loss and our touch base with our ancestral wisdom and knowledge.
Okay.
Right? Mm. So, nak tak nak aja tau. Because when you talk about how the government wants to spend, right? They can spend on mega projects, like for example, smart tunnel to help mitigate floods. But that's not necessarily the only way. You don't have to churn out and then pool into one mega project. Disperse the level of mitigation into things like that. Small things, but parts that you're able to absorb the intensity of floods. Think about how you can then, let's not talk about the mega, I'm talking about the internet or technology, on how we can cari lagi banyak duit just because we want to invest on big things. Mm-hmm. What I'm talking about is how do you disperse so that each community will get a sum amount of funding so that they can plan with their ancestral wisdom a mitigation plan of flood that is well suitable for the climate of that locality and the people of that locality. Mm-hmm. So, jangan cakap lah kalau kita nak pasang, all those, sensors, AI sensors. Banyak, because that's part of the plan as well, that they want to put AI sensors because
that's
then you could...
costly.
Exactly. So, rather than pulling to one cause, disperse it out, and understand that it works within locality rather than one size fits all kind of thing. Yeah.
Well, I want to add on that. I think when it comes to budgeting, we need to make sure it's a climate budgeting. We are not talking about the normal budgeting like budget 2023. No, it's about there's one climate. Specific a climate budgeting or SDG
you mean
budgeting.
An allocation?
It's not just allocation. The name itself reference to every single ministry. You know, like if let's say we look into Ministry of Women, there will be allocation on certain things that's covering prone to flood or covering during flood aids or whatsoever. So from there, we can look into this strategic framework that can be there into a financial outcome. And there's a lot of budgeting outlook or budgeting framework that can be done that can be adopted from outside the country.
But again, with adopting things and policies from out of the state, you have to really understand, you know, the current locality. Because kalau tak, things like, you know, the carbon market, right, and foreign companies and foreign private investors wanted to, you know, invest in some of the mitigations here in Malaysia, but without regarding how the locals act and how the locals, you know, interact within those sort of mitigations that they plan, then it will not fit. And at the end of the day, it's a lost investment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I understand. And also, with what both of you have just shared, it seems like there are many solutions that we can actually sort of tackle the issue of floods in the country. And I feel like perhaps more communication and more climate think tanks should be involved in these plans, as you mentioned, you know, budgeting. You wanted to add on?
I want to add on when it comes to all these investment and such. I think this is the part where Ministry of Finance need to put some sort of, I'm talking more about framework, but at the same time, this is a strategic plan on how to regulate all these changes. You know, if we believe that a carbon market that can ruin all certain on environmental issues, environmental pillars, I think this is the part where we need to have not just a strict regulation, but at the same time, much more inclusive communication. Communication is always the key. I think when it comes to create a policy, first thing first,
exactly.
Policy, communication, and then framework, and then at the same time, finance. Finance is always
communication
important.
Communication is key. Yep. Now we're going to take a short break. Stay tuned for more. Hello and welcome back to It's About Youth. I'm Soraya Mia and I am speaking with Shakib Sharil, who is a climate finance policy consultant and exco of the BN Youth Volunteer, as well as Ahmad Norfitri, Badrun Nizam Norfitri from Youth Malaysia. So I'm going to straight away head on to the topic of floods, which we have been discussing just now. The Meteorological Department, or Met Malaysia, has actually warned of continuous heavy rainfall for the next couple of days due to the northeast monsoon rain. So right now we're already so close to this. What are the short-term measures that you think is needed currently? Any of you?
Well, I think first thing first, we need to declare that Malaysia is no longer a country that is prone to floods, but we need to act as a Malaysia as a loss and damage country. So the reason why loss and damage is because we have lost a lot of things. We have damages, you know, through the not just prawns, through this you know, Malaysian disaster, like such as landslides, floods and such, is affecting every single, you know, not just social impacts, it involves economic outlook as well. So I think when it comes to that, we need to address that. Is Malaysia is a loss and damage country. And from there, I think we can go for much more on tackling not severe, but critical issues such as a short-term plan. Maybe we can think of how to do the inter-resettlement plan. Some of the places are no longer available to live anymore, such as Taman Sri Muda. Taman Sri Muda, I believe, in my opinion, it's no longer safe to, you know, live over there.
So you need safe to.
Can you imagine living, being a resident exactly. in Taman
yeah, yeah.
and the December 2021
so
floods?
I think they need to resettle, but at the same time, we need to have an action plan. I think by Selangor government or maybe a federal government to have this thing. And I think not just Taman Sri Muda. I think there's a lot of places. One of it is in Segamat. This is one of the closest to my heart as well, these prawn cases. And when it comes to resettlement, I think we need to have a financing as well. So we need to have a certain allocation. We need to have an action plan working national and international to grab all those funds and then funding a special program within the budget itself. So I think when it comes to environmental ministry, they always have the least money to get on the budget. So I think, yes, so I think it is a right time for us, since we have VCM, we have a JCM, which is Joint Implementation Mechanism, can be done to restructure back again the financing and such within the short-term period. I think we can done it within 3 to 5 years.
It takes willpower. I'm not talking just about finance. Kalau kita duduk cakap kan, kalau kita tak nak buat, tak buat juga. So, taking on what his point was on climate migration. Okay. Because then again, people, youth, move. They have to mobilize themselves. They have to, rather than working on the local businesses and economy, then they have to look elsewhere. It's much more safe, much more secure, and where else to look for in the big city, right? So pemindahan ataupun what we call in climate migration, right? It tips off the balance of the rural economy. Moving is not the answer, right? Because we need to adopt back and adapt to the climates, because in the rural areas, you already have generation knowledge well enough to sort of live with the climate that they're facing for years and years. Mm-hmm. It's just that when youth, so younger generations started moving out, you know, there's this disconnection between the older generation to the younger generation, exactly. And how they can survive, because we, as human beings, know how to survive. We need to pass down that knowledge. Mm-hmm. So when youth move and look out elsewhere for answers, so you sort of cut it out, you know? Exactly.
Yeah, and that actually brings me right to my next point, you know, about the more vulnerable communities.
Groups, yes,
yeah,
exactly.
We tend to forget that climate disasters or disasters can impact the vulnerable groups even more than others. So when I talk about vulnerable groups, of course I talk about, you know, poverty and, you know, exactly. Heading towards poverty. Poverty is actually associated with, you know, poor dietary habits, mm-hmm. as well as higher risk of chronic diseases, mm-hmm. right? So there are still a lot of pockets of poverty, especially in the rural areas, right? So how do we actually, you know, engage or manage or prepare this part of the country, these groups, to perhaps better prepare for, you know, flood-prone diseases that can actually turn into epidemics?
Messaging, right? So it's a sense of urgency, whether or not the people understand that they are living in very vulnerable areas and with vulnerable communities. So bedridden uncles, so imagine last year, cerita, kan? You have bedridden uncles who had to wait because their children are far off. You have the OKUs who need wheelchairs, but then to mobilize during boats to evacuation centers, you know how difficult those parts were. So vulnerable communities had it worse. Right, and it's a proper messaging within the local community to address things like community mapping. Where is the safest area for you to evacuate when it happens? Whether there's an alarm sound, you know, if contoh air dah naik, yeah, you know, the water started to rise. So where can they go to? Well, do they have, you know, emergency bags, you know, emergency stuff ready when they have to evacuate? So the messaging has to be clear, mm-hmm. And it has to be on ground, mm-hmm. not things like super tinggi sangat bahasa or you know, something that the people
something
would understand.
Something that people can
yes.
understand.
Because
right.
if you see and people start commenting on Facebook with sharing on videos, you know, why are they having fun? This is not fun, right? Because some people are playing in the water because it's dangerous. So we have to mobilize the messaging, not just on national television, national newspapers, but it has to go on the ground. Make sure that each household are ready to face and they know where the evacuation centers are, mm-hmm. right? And then facilities, especially to help, you know, vulnerable communities, the sick, the elder, and not just that, disproportionately flooding, disproportionately affects gender. Things like hygiene, for girls and boys, it might be different, right? So they have to get ready, you know, prepare. Jangan, it's not about unpreparedness. Because last year, we were talking about how it's so devastating. Like, we didn't prepare for this, but you would expect it. You know, Malaysia is this vulnerable climate area, right? And when you're talking to children or ajar geography to anak-anak, you know, Malaysia is protected, well protected by our neighbours. But that is what we were told when we were young, but no more, right? Because things change and children has to be given the truth and, of course, importantly, psychological aid, right? Mm-hmm. Things like eco-anxiety, post-traumatic disorder for people in the frontline areas. Mm-hmm. Ada, I think, a video lately, Pakcik, tahun lepas, he was, bini anak dia meninggal, right? So there was assistance to help him process the psychological effect, but in languages that he understand. Because you'd imagine, orang kampung apa ni? What is the psychological help? I don't understand, I don't need it.
I guess it's really good that we have social media now and TikTok, and a lot of people actually can reach out to different groups in the communities, especially.
Yes.
Yeah. So, all right, I'm going to ask Shakib perhaps my next question for the future generations, because we understand that climate change impacts us, we feel it right now. But for the future generations, like our children, our grandchildren, are going to definitely feel it worse than us. Yeah, that's why a lot of youths that we see now are actually advocating it, because we are worried about our futures, right? So how do you actually reach out to lawmakers of the importance to invest in climate change adaptation?
One thing, throughout my experience in the climate change activism, I think the most important part is capacity building among each other to make sure that the language has been diverse, dispersed, and it will be easy communicated. Throughout this experience, I learned that most of the people don't understand what is climate change all about until the fact comes, oh, this is climate change.
But really though, are they blaming on climate change?
I think we can call it as one of the factor, but at the same time, throughout the capacity building, when everyone have that, you know, understanding, that communication, inclusive communication, we have like sort of activity on the grouping, and this grouping can go straight away on to the lawmakers, straight away go to MP, just like what we do back in Pulai is in Johor Bahru, one of the Pulai constituents. So what we do is we doing a plan how to mitigate the floods without helping of anyone. So we try to make that plan as well. And at the same time, once we do that plan made by the people, for the people, we send it straight away to the lawmakers that, you know, we have done all these things. I think we need to increase more on the not just capacity building, at the same time inclusive framework, finance, inclusiveness of stakeholders and such. I think this is the part where MP plays a role to bring this case to the national, which is the parliament. Mm. So from there, if let's say there's a lot of MP have a same case study, have a same problem, and then the people itself has been creating all these things. In Parliament, we can came up with a one framework, one policy, or maybe there's a lot of policies. It can be done from a bottom up to up down process. So I think it's a very circular process as well. So I think from there, we can see there will be a lot of, you know, covering a lot of process and covering a lot of things that can be done, you know, in the future.
Yeah, I was actually thinking, both of you are involved in, you know, climate advocacy for you know, at least 2 years since the pandemic, right? When, like you said, when people started to realize, you know, floods is one of the biggest factors is climate change. This is out of curiosity, right? Like, what's your experience like being involved among many young Malaysians, or if you're involved in international, you know, youths in climate advocacy?
So we're talking about participation of youths, because things like inclusivity is what youth, us at youth, sort of champion. We want to welcome everybody, anybody who's interested, anybody who wants to know more, anybody who wants to contribute, right? So we celebrate skills, any skill sets, anything that you're particularly good at. So if you want to sing about the climate, if you want to draw about the climate, if you want to do sports about the climate, go ahead, you know? But you're talking about genuineness, yeah. Right? I think the good foundation is to understand the philosophy of why we do. Why do we participate in this movement? Then it would be there for the long run, right? I had that sort of internal turmoil back in a few years back that made me sort of reconsider what are my life's purposes and values, you know? Those are the things that I would like to share with younger generations.
Purpose-driven.
Yes, exactly. What is your purpose? And fit that with what you can do. It's not about you going into STEM, because semua orang boleh pergi masuk STEM. And not everybody can hug trees or go hiking. But, you know, think about the things that you can do, yeah. And that makes it worthwhile, and you want to continue the fight more and more.
Yeah, I absolutely love that answer. Actually, it will answer many of the questions out there, perhaps by the older generations that are curious, you know, why are we so passionate about this? But yeah, that's all for the episode today. Thanks once again for joining us, and we'll see you on the next episode of It's About Youth.